The Sunday Rub is drilling deep.
Yes, it is one of our favourite segments, Howie. It's fair to say we try and go a bit deep with the Supercoach here in Ross Lyon and what is probably going to be his last season. He was fantastic last year, even better this year, probably cut back in the AFL coaching world next year. So we like to enjoy these segments. And I want to ask you about Michael while he's shaking his head. I want to ask you about...
My favourite topic, yep, go.
Michael Walters, because it is Sir Doug Nicholls... Indigenous round, of course. In the Dreamtime game last year. We'd love to put the Indigenous players on a pedestal because they do provide so much joy and excitement, and their stories are often phenomenal in terms of some of the humble beginnings they've come through and some of the challenges they've faced. And you saw Michael Walters come through the door, Ross, at Fremantle. Pick number 53 in the 2008 National Draft. I think he lived in the same street as Chris Yaron and
Nat Nui, yep.
Which
neighbours, yeah, and they played at the same junior club.
Imagine their kick-to-kicks in the street.
Would be handy, wouldn't it?
Would be a nice little YouTube clip. 176 centimetres, currently one of the superstars of the competition. What was it like early days when Michael Walters walked into the football
club?
Well,
he did debut under Mark Harvey, and I remember he kicked a banana goal against Brisbane, and he had the fist pump going. I thought, gee, this kid's got some talent. It was a pretty special goal, you know. He had a few stamps on him, but he'd had a torn posterior and had been struggling with injury when I got there. But you tried to build a relationship with all the players. So Sonny is very affable, very outgoing, involved with everything, and had a bit of Sal in him at that time.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, Sonny, you need to do this. Yes, coach. Yes, coach. And then he would text me. He would text me doing this, doing that, and. But then the time trial and the skin folds were going up. They ran 65, 70, 75. And I said, how about you get off the bourbon and cokes, you know? So, and then he'd say, but he'd always be, I had a few bourbon and cokes. And he had very tight friendship group from, as you said, with Yaron and Nat Nui. But in the community, like where you rely upon each other and you run the streets, and they're a bit mischievous, the law might have chased them a few times for who knows, a bit of graffiti or whatever. So he was in everything, and he found it very hard to separate from his mates and who he'd run around with and the professional life of AFL football. So I gave him the opportunity, and then it got to the point where I thought, enough's enough here. This isn't changing. The skinnies and the time trial just wasn't happening.
So how does that conversation go?
Well, it's really
interesting. You're talking about his professionalism?
Yeah, well, we'd worked with him, and I was right, you're done. Right, so I said to Chris Bond, we need to get him in. I'm going to send him away. And Bondy said, whatever you do, don't sit too close. Not within range of the left hook. Right? Because he can really hold his hands up, Sonny, and he's very fiery and very emotional. So I took the advice. I sat right back, and I just said, I was new to the club trying to set some standards. Pav Skinnies were a bit high, so he ran laps. Unless you're on a certain bit, you couldn't join in training. And when I first got there, was eight blokes on the track. I thought, there's something wrong here, I was under a little bit of pressure. So in the end, it was like time to get moving. So I said, right. It was really clear cut. You need to be able to run. I'd seen his PB for a 3K. He could really run. It was like 10:20. I thought, gee, just coming into the system 3 years later, you're punching out 11:30. That's not really tickling my fancy. So it was really clear. 10:30 3K. Skin folds 50 or below, which was a Dennis Pager measure. Mm-hmm. And you're welcome back, son. Mm-hmm. But don't come back until you know you can achieve them. So
what was his immediate reaction?
The left hook was a sort of fist clench, and he was pretty fiery. He was, but then he stormed out a little bit. But we got to the Steve Grace. You ought to check in with him and support Steve Grace, to his credit, who now was at the Bulldogs. I think it was at Collingwood Development.
Yep.
Worked with him every day. He went back, bloke played at West Coast, then Freo, coached Swan Districts, really. Took him on his wing. So because he was a boxer, he boxed every day and can really train hard in the gym. It's incredible to see him. And he went to Swan District and he trained with the under-19s, the reserves and the seniors. So he's doing 3 sessions a day. He got his diet right. And he was gone like for 6 weeks or something. And he made the call, I'd like to come back. Okay, we'll do the time trial. He broke 10 minutes 30. Skinnies were under 50. And then, but I didn't make it easy for him. We didn't make it easy. He played 14 games in a row in the waffle.
Wow.
Because we started to go okay in 2012 after a little bit of hiccup, right? So, and everyone was coming. And I was like, no, I don't want to, I want him to understand. I wanted him to create a way of being and doing that was going to last for a long time. Right? And we come to play Melbourne. And I reckon he was emergency. It was round 14 in the end. And I said, oh, we'll play him now, you know. And he was ready to go. Like, he was starring in the waffle.
And he's in your office every week saying, why aren't you playing?
No. He just left me alone.
Okay.
Left me alone. But the match committee, you know, you could imagine, put him in. Yeah, no worries. When I'm ready. Like, we're ready with Bondi and the match committee. So we fly to Melbourne. And it's a really interesting bit. I'll never forget the game. So we're playing Melbourne. And they must have been going all right at the time. I can't remember. We're going terribly. I can't remember. And, Anthony Grover, who was playing and, you know, really well respected, and he'd had an injury, and I turned up the, as Wayne would know, you turn up the furnace on him, like pre-game, like, you know, once you cross the white line, son, you're accountable, like, you need to. Anyway, he pulled out, right? Walters comes in. Melbourne kicks 6-0 in the first quarter or something. I walk down and Sonny's playing. And Chris Bond looked at me and goes, geez, we're in trouble here, sir. I said, oh, this isn't good, is it? And then you get to the whiteboard, you get to work, you know. So Sonny, I think, from memory, kicked 3 or 4 goals, but I'll never forget one thing he did. And Cole Sylvia, we with respect, dominated that day. And I think that was a part of us as a club targeting. Sonny, Melbourne were coming back. We come back, Sonny starred, but someone got out, like Green or whoever it was, running down the corridor on his own all the way to the goal square. Sonny saw him from the half forward line, sprinted the centre half back, saw it out to the goal square, defended him in the goal square, and basically won us the game.
Wow. Desperate.
Won us the game. Mm. And that was the review, the trademark review. Have a look at this. So you saw his footy smarts. So this is a kid that's been sent away. Couldn't, you know, everything I just went through, and he's come in, he's saved us the game, he's kicked 3, he's dominated, and then from there he just trains like an animal, to the point we have to say, mate, take it easy. He won't, like, he sprints through the car and just smashes himself in team training in the gym. So he's incredible, like an absolute pro. Then he starts to conduct the meetings in the reviews, and he just really blossoms. So and to see him, you know, and I saw his parents after we had the losing grand final. We had the function at the exhibition centre. I spoke to his mum and dad, you know, and his mum's a Penny on her side, and Dad Walters, and they were just so proud of him. And, you know, but the key to his story, if you asked him what happened, his girlfriend and now wife, partner, Marnie, who they got 3 children with, at the time I sent him away, she was pregnant. Mm. She became pregnant. It was about that time. And he was like, right, I got to provide for my family. So we talk about everyone, I talk to players, and all of us, you've got to be clear on your purpose. And AFL football is incredibly tough. Now, if you want it for the money, or you just want to be the best you can be, but you've got to be clear, why am I doing it? Because when it gets tough, AFL footy, if you're not clear why you're there, you just give up, and you walk away, you don't give anything. So he became really clear. He got racially abused at, we're playing a waffle team on the build-up, because I was going to watch him, and he really fired up. And I sat with Marnie that day, and she said, you know, thanks for the, I said, he's done it all here, you know. So, and then he fought his way through. So the purpose become clear, he's training, and he just got better and better every year until we really put him in that Dustin Martin role. I think he kicked 44 goals and was averaging 24 possessions. So I think he was an All-Australian and a pretty special kid, pretty special. Mm.
Great story.
Great story, Rossi. Great story.
Is he Captain Fremantle, Michael Walters? And do you think, could he take over from Fife as the...
It's not for me to really talk about him now and what they do and what they value, but certainly, if your leaders are 2 things, so you've got to be able to perform game day, you've got to be able to play, you've got to have a level of competency that's really high. So he ticks that box, and then you need character. So leadership's character and competency and setting standards. He does those things as well. So for mine, I don't tend to complicate AFL leadership teams too much, like. Train hard, play hard, and carry yourself well, and he ticks those boxes.